Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Marvel Vision, a podcast about Marvel, the MCU, and hey, whatever we want to dig out of the archives. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And this episode, we're going to be talking about X-Men 1997, the continuation of X-Men 1992. First two episodes of it are up on Disney Plus. If you haven't checked them out, we're going to be going into spoilers. We're going to be talking about them, our impressions, what we thought. We've all watched every episode of the original X-Men, the animated series, are very well familiar with it, know exactly what's going on here, and that's how we're approaching this. So we'll jump
right in. I mean, you say that like it's a joke, Alex.
What's up?
But here's the thing.
I've seen them all.
Pete and I have watched them all. For some reason, for those of
you
who don't know,
we've watched them all. Pete's watched them all. Let's move on from there.
Okay, great.
Because here's the thing. We had this discussion on our live show where we were learned first that somehow Alex never watched the X-Men animated series as a child. He was like doing
push-ups. He's also never seen Roadhouse, which drove me nuts during the week in Geek.
Also
we
very applicable right here because we're going to be talking about the new Roadhouse on Prime Video for sure.
We don't do it on
our Marvel podcast.
I had a blast.
Jake Gyllenhaal, a.k.a. Hold on. All right. We're going to put a pin in that I had a blast with watching Roadhouse, but didn't watch Invincible podcasting. Yeah. We'll talk about that the air. Probably.
No, Pete, just real quick. We don't do some Roadhouse. Sort of like biker bar book club. We do a comic book club. So it makes way more sense.
Listen, I have certain responsibilities. Okay. Yes, I do a podcast, but I was also a bouncer at one point in my life. And so, you know.
So you have to support the community.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah. I love when you hang out with your old bouncer buddies. No one can get in anywhere.
Well, this is what everybody has come here to our Marvel podcast to hear. Why don't we move on, talk about the first two episodes of X-Men 97.
Well, a little recap. Alex, I know you often do recap, but I am rewatching all of the original X-Men, the animated series. And so just to catch you up, the X-Men.
Rewatching.
Live in a house. It's a mansion.
A mansion.
They are not only hated, but they're also feared.
But they're gifted.
So, wait, sorry. Let me just get this straight. So they're hated and feared by humans, I assume, right? So clearly they're like, fuck this, not interested, right? And they just stick to their mansion. It's like the circle type thing.
It's most rich people. They just stick to their mansion.
Now, interesting, you're watching some rich person programming, Alex, and not Roadhouse, a movie for the people.
Well, exactly.
Well, hold on. I am a rich person, and I need to support my community, right? So I watch that.
Flexing. Yeah, I watch a rich flex.
Describe to me the rich
community. The shopping
community.
Network, whatever that's called.
Nothing more opulent than watching the Home Shopping Network. You really nailed it.
There's a lot of diamonds there. It's a lot of rich stuff on that network.
I don't think there's
any diamonds on there.
That's cubic zirconia.
Yeah. There's crystals.
Oh, la-di-da.
What side are you on?
I'm on no side at all sides.
Have we talked about the X-Men yet?
Here, I'm trying to establish a couple things from the original series. So when I started rewatching this,
sound music.
It's the great music. It's a show that is nonstop high drama, high melodrama. Every character's upset all the time. Wolverine is impossible to even speak to in the original series.
Stop.
He's just so angry all the time.
He's just grunting. Crazy.
That's hard to communicate with. The Wolverine Jean Cyclops love triangle is intense. The philosophy underlying it is strong. They're constantly getting gassed by different villains. Gas is a very big way that they are
threatened. Huge problem.
Here's something I noticed. Warpath is in the opening credits on the bad guy side. Weirdly. Or Thunder.
This is for the original show, not this
one. For the original.
Okay.
Yes. There are a million great Easter eggs that are just there, and then you don't have to talk about them. Alpha Flight members, X-Force members. Just a million. Maverick shows up a bunch. They seed things super
Tom
well.
Cruise?
No. Maverick, the gun-toting Wolverine buddy.
Right.
They leaned so hard into comic book continuity that the Juggernaut episode, famous episode.
I thought maybe it was Mel Gibson Maverick, but I guess I was wrong about that too.
The card playing Western.
Yep.
Wow, Pete really wants to talk about other pop culture ephemera tonight. The Juggernaut is magical in it, not a mutant. Yeah. They stick to it, even though it would be way easier just to do it a different way. But literally, there's a whole section of the Juggernaut where he's like, I'm not even a mutant. My helmet's magically bound to my head, blah, 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 blah. And everyone's like, as a kid, imagine as a kid being like, what? He's got a magic stick-on helmet that they have to get off, and then it's fine?
You think that's the line for a kid watching is like, well, I was in, but then this whole magical Juggernaut suit, I can't get behind this.
Well, I'm just saying there are a lot of, like, beige flags on this show about, like, it's wild this was made for kids. People, like, are, like, almost die all the time. You see Ghost Rider, they get into the Belladonna Gambit plot, subplot. This show goes so hard, the 11th episode of Days of Future Past. That'd be like reading 10 comics and being like, here's Watchmen, go to bed.
This show goes very fast as well.
Right, well, so let me on. Just finish
that's
up
what
this
Justin,
recap.
I don't know if you know how conversations work. That's what Justin is working up to right now.
Yeah.
Well, I got tired of waiting.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you do? Are you tired?
Great. Oh, really? Did you get tired at the beginning of this podcast or just now?
No, I got tired of waiting for the point.
That's your mutant power, Wolverine. We get Morph dies, and then it comes back to life. It's so intense and sad, and it's Mr. Sinister that we meet Angel for 1 second, and he's immediately turned into Archangel, and he's the angst is just – my point is it's all angst all the time. It's the most X-Men – it's the most X of X-Men there is. And then we are brought to X-Men 97, which I think – extremely faithfully takes the cartoon
almost
and the comics.
Too much.
No, I don't think too much. It upgrades in certain ways, but is again going so hard all the time, not shying away from any continuity.
You wouldn't like it if maybe they slowed down a little bit?
No, I like this pace. Also, I live in this pace.
So just to get this out of the way and make this abundantly clear, I distinctly remember watching the first episode of X-Men, the animated series, because I saw Morph die. I know that. I know the X-Men very well. That was, I think, probably my first real love as comics, like reading the Chris Claremont X-Men and being like, this is amazing, and I want to just like inhale this, inject this into my veins. So like, I know X-Men and stuff. I don't know why I never watched it. I just never did. That is something I completely missed. So frankly, coming into this, even though I love X-Men, seeing this as like a clear nostalgia play to be like, you love this 30 decades ago, you old people, get on board with this thing. See, I don't know. I wasn't totally into the idea. I was very dubious about it. I wasn't sure if it would work. I wasn't sure if the animation style would work.
Then the music started and you were in.
The music is great and it's always great. I was very happy about that. It took me about half of the first episode to like get on board with the tone and understand what they were going for. But once they hit like that midway point of Jubilee in the club in the first episode.
You're a Jubilee sucker.
No, yeah. But there's something about that that was like, it's perfectly 90s, but more importantly, it is perfectly X-Men. They're in the middle of a high-stakes situation. They got to get Roberto Da Costa, we know him as Sunspot, back in the fold. They got to bring him back. He's in danger. But, of course, they take a moment to do some mutant power dancing in the middle there. That is exactly the sort of stuff they're constantly balancing in the comics. And as soon as that moment happened, I was like, oh, okay, this is like... Back in the day, you would not be, oh, we need to read the new number one of X-Men that came out earlier this year, which is different than the new number one of X-Men that came out earlier last year, et cetera, et cetera. You'd go into the store and be like, who's this sharp guy on the cover hanging out on with this lady with a sword in a very skimpy purple costume? I don't know. Looks cool. X-Men 237. Here we go. What's
this
happening?
Is what I
don't
start.
Know.
Yeah.
But I love this. And that's... This is not to be like, rare, funny, duddy, but I do think there is something to be said for that, for just throwing you in the middle that feels so perfectly X-Men that the show captures. To give you like a little bit of context, I watched this with my whole family. I know X-Men, obviously, did not really watch the show. My son has watched every X-Men animated show, is obsessed with the X-Men, but he's also 9 years old. So, like,
so he's watched more than you have, is what you're saying.
He has. He has watched more than I have. We've spent the past couple of weeks rewatching the movies and everything, except for Logan and the Deadpool movies. My wife knows X-Men, but never really read the comics and has only seen some of the movies. And my daughter, who's 14, has seen three of the movies that she watched with me and my son, but, like, that's pretty much it. She hasn't read any of the books. Every single one of us loved this show. We loved every episode.
That's great.
At the end
that's
of the first episode, thing. Everybody at the cliffhanger was like, what? Okay, let's play the next one. And we watched the next one. And I will say, we got to see the third one as well. Same thing. Like, end of the second one, we're like, gotta watch the third one. When's the fourth one on? We gotta know. And it's great. It feels like watching a comic book. It doesn't shy away from the cheesiness. It leads into it in such a fun way where it owns it. And we're like, I know you called this out beforehand, Pete, when we were doing the live show, but they overplayed it in the trailer, I guess. But the Cyclops Knot moment is, it's 30 years past its expiration date as a joke, but it 100% works because they commit to it.
He's a dork.
They commit to the bit across the board, and it's great. Everything where everybody throws out the cheesiest possible line, Gambit referring to himself in the third person, be like, oh, Gambit's sad now.
Well, just the accents alone. The rogue ability to drop a absolutely nonsense cat-based aphorism into any conversation is insane. She says cat three times in
have
the
you
second.
Ever seen, have you ever seen the cat who sounds like it's saying, well, hi, in a southern accent? It's been passed around on the internet a lot. That's Rogue, basically, like in this. But that's also, I don't know about you guys, but all of these voices are like, yes, that's what I hear when I read the comic book.
I was hoping for Method Man for Bishop, to be honest. All right, let me
now,
just...
Pete, you're sort of... Let me set you up, Pete. You're a bit of a skeptic on the X-Men. Mm-hmm. A lover of Wolverine, a former lover of Wolverine.
Hold
on, can I just mention, you write... it's an interesting blog. I disagree with most of the things, but Pete does a very prolific blog about how mutants are trying to take over humans through evolution, and they deserve to be locked up and thrown away, and their powers taken away and depowered.
Because he's a friend of humanity.
Yeah, real.
Yeah, don't make fun of my FOA jacket. Listen,
I'm sorry,
I'm
just trying to keep you on Trask.
Trask master over here.
That's almost as bad as the not joke in X-Men. All right, listen.
All right, are you going to kick it into the next Garrick?
Oh, man, can I just say what I thought?
Oh, can I just say things after I interrupted both of you nonstop for the past 20 minutes? Go ahead, Pete. Absolutely. No interruption.
You both went off on tirades and I let you go. Sure, I got bored in one of the monologues, but
these
anyways,
are rehearsed monologues.
Listen, I think that they had me at the music. They had me at the nice animation flip that's new and different and very exciting. But I just feel like they overplay the hand a little bit with the accents. the dad jokes, not as enjoyable. I was hoping for a little bit more of an update. It's been 30 years. I don't want the exact same thing because we're not in the exact same place. There was stuff that worked before that doesn't work for me now. And it's probably because I'm older. I don't, you know, we're going through material. I mean, those two episodes, so much shit has gone down. I would mind
need to
a
be
little
slower.
I would like it to be slower. I'd like to spend some time with some characters. This isn't a comic book. This is a show. I would like to get more, you know, and they're going fast and furious and it's quiptastic and it's, you know what I mean? Yeah, even the choices that Morph is making, I'm like, Jesus, guy, take it easy, bro.
He is going hard.
Yeah, and so, yeah, that's it. I mean, I think the casting's amazing. Sure, I wanted Method Man, but that's just, you know, whatever. But I just think
sorry, could I ask, this is legitimately don't know, is that a popular fan casting online or something? Is that anything?
Yeah, he has said he would like to do it. A lot of people online were like, okay, that'd be amazing, and got people kind of excited for a little while, but then it went away. And then I was like, ooh, maybe, because I hadn't heard anything. But anyways, so... I just think that
I imagine Method Man's quote to play Bishop is much higher than the actor playing Bishop.
Yes, but it is Marvel, and you know, dreams do come true sometimes because it is, you know, on Disney as well. So I just think that, you know, whatever. But that's the only qualms I have. I'm having a great time. I mean, sure, Cyclops is a douche, but the choices that they're making with Magneto.
Cyclops rules. I think you're actually wrong.
No,
about
everybody
that,
thinks Cyclops great now, but I'm not going to hop on the Cyclops bandwagon
because. You hop on that Cyclops bandwagon
because. No, I will not.
In
I
that
will
first
not.
Episode, I saw somebody calling this out, and I don't want to take credit for it, but I think this is absolutely correct. Most people think about Cyclops's eye beams as a beam of heat, like it's a laser he's shooting out. It's not.
He's over beaming, dude. It's the destruction he did to the Earth for that stupid landing. Like, take a shoot, dude. Don't be an asshole and split the Earth and change just so you can land.
Landing of all time?
No,
like,
that would
maybe
that
one was, of the coolest scenes I've ever seen
an area of
any animated
like, if you
series.
Imagine if you lived in a village anywhere near a landing that he did.
Hold on a second, Pete. You're worried about the property damage all of a sudden?
To the desert?
Yeah. You're like this show
he's
moves too fast.
He's shooting laser beams just so he can get from one side of the room to the other. You destroyed a wall just so you could move 5 feet. I mean,
Pete,
guy.
If you could laser yourself across the room instead of walk, I know you'd do it.
100%.
I know your lazy ass would be blazing through the wall.
My point is creative use of his powers that I don't think we even usually see in comic books or anything like that, which was very impressive to me. And also on that scene where they get attacked in the plane, the Blackbird blows up and the X-Men all fall out. Unimpeachable. Like everything about that is the coolest thing ever. Ending with Cyclops landing, saying to me, my X-Men, everybody falling behind him and the do-do-do-do-do pop in. Perfection.
He's genius.
Perfection. You know, what did he say? He was like, he didn't say, like, let's bring the thunder. He was like, what's about to get a accumulation around here? Like, he was like, hey, bring the weather forecast.
Time for the weather report? Or something like,
I was just come on.
Great. Here's the thing. Like, I love the confidence. All the other X-Men who couldn't fly got carried by other people. And you think he's like, oh no, I'm gonna die, and he's like, nope. He just like flies down, and then catches himself with his eyes. Amazing. Also, shouts to the fact in the earlier scene, he's a badass there too, but he has to tap the button on the visor every time. I love that they're sticking to the old school shit. And that's the thing, Pete, is this is going to be cheesy. I forgot a little bit at the beginning that this is set in the 90s.
It's extra cheese. It's not just regulation cheese.
Yeah, but the commitment to it of showing but not over saying it, I sort of forgot the 90s of it, and then it cut to Gambit in that first scene, and he's wearing
When Gambit drops
the beignets, first of all, he's going to get burned on his taut little tubby. That's all I'm going to say.
It's just when he dropped the card, I was like, oh, come on. I mean,
when he tries to kill Cyclops over beignets for no reason.
He tries to kill Cyclops. Wolverine also definitely wants to kill Cyclops almost constantly. Like,
as
to
an
insanely rude extent. Like, no. Wolverine's a rude dude, I would say, in this episode, yeah. while Beast is doing machines, would you?
Oh my God.
Way to dress it up for our
guy. Stop. Beast is great. Storm is fantastic. The godlike use of Storm is fun and a great choice. The choice for Beast is fantastic.
It's wild to me that you love Beast, because he's the one that I'm like, cut him.
Oh, wow. Too much on the Beast, huh?
I just like, he's just always on the fringe, and he's always being like, well, I think this book is interesting. I'm like, what are you doing?
Oh, dude? But it's okay when Rogue's like, the cat's pajamas, let the cat out of the bag, and the cat
funny
here.
Every time.
Love it's it every time. In the second episode, she does three, I want to say, almost back to back different cat based things.
It's
and
a
I was
bit
like,
much.
It's yeah. definitely a bit much. But I think that's the point of the show. But let me ask you this question. Does this mean that the X-Men's prime time was the 90s? Because, like, watching this, it's like, huh, this is what I think of as the X-Men. And yes, this is when I was really reading comics. But I've been reading comics also ever since then. But this still feels like the X-Men. Is that accurate?
I don't know. Think maybe just because this is when it hit its prime in storytelling, like, for anybody who doesn't know this, I'm going to get some of the years incorrect, so I won't call them out specifically. But when the X-Men came out, it was obviously part and parcel of the explosion of Marvel Comics at the beginning. But it never sold as well as anything else, and ultimately it was canceled. It wasn't until they brought it back in the beginning iteration of this, what we're watching right now, that it really exploded and it became a whole phenomenon. I think there's been some absolutely superb, iconic runs since. I'd call out like Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely's New X-Men. I think that's fantastic. Yeah. I know we have a disagreement here on the podcast, but like the Krakoa era is something that has, whatever you think about it, has been impactful for people.
Like, really? Yeah. You're going to go Krakoa is the second X-Men run you're going talk about? I mean, come on, dude. There's so much better choices you could have made.
Well, but it's just to say it's like a variation. Like the X-Men can iterate in so many different ways. But let me say this. It feels like those two eras you just mentioned, Alex, are responses to this era.
That's fair.
Their new X-Men, Grant Morrison's, is literally like, hey, it's time to do a new version of this and not do that. And then Krakoa is literally like, what if we took it all the way?
Yeah.
And no, I think everywhere in between there's been responses, but it feels like, and we haven't really gone back to this since, you know, the Jim Lee X-Men Blue and this TV show.
Part of it, I would imagine, just has to do with the realities of publishing, that you have to put out multiple X-Men books. You cannot have the core Uncanny X-Men and that's it running, which that's where all the soap opera lives. So instead, you have to have multiple X-Men teams going. You have to have an X-Force team. You have to have a Wolverine solo title, another solo title. And all of these things at the same time are bubbling and you got to coordinate. So you can't really have that like Chris Claremont thing of like, yeah, I know I'm going to pay this off in 60 issues. There you go. Yeah.
But you could have this be the core story and have it everyone else be doing different things. And I do think that we may be doing this in the future.
Well, just to get back to what you were saying about the show, though, I do think this essential lineup or some version of this lineup, because this lineup is even, I think, different than where the show starts at the beginning of X-Men, the animated series, right? Like, it goes through iterations. Yeah. People come in and out and whatever, but you still have that core of like Wolverine, Storm, Cyclops, Jean Grey, Beast, I guess, as well, and Professor X there, though obviously in the background, in everybody's memories and in our hearts. I think that's like that thing, same sort of thing as with Justice League, where they're always like, what if we shook it up and threw some other characters in there? And then years later, they're like, nah, it's super bad. It's Batman. It's Wonder Woman. Yeah. We know who the core seven are. And you don't exactly have like a core seven with X-Men, but this is as close as you get.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I would like to say, though, that the Magneto stuff is absolutely glorious. I mean, what a great use of Magneto. The voice actor is unbelievable. And I think it's the right amount of, like, lecture and kind of, like, villain monologuing in a really nice way. I mean, the choices they made. I mean, when he's flying up there and starts to cry, I was like, oh, Magneto, don't get me in the field, bro.
End of the second episode.
Yeah.
Well, so I would say, if we're going to jump back to that, the first episode I thought was great, super fun. You got Master Mold, you got the Sentinels, you got Trask and Garrick and all the humans. It's very good, like, table setting thing of, like, this is what the show is going to be. In case it has been 30 years, here's what's going on. If you've never watched this before, here's who these characters are, so you can jump right into it, even though there's still going to be a lot of stuff that's going to confuse you. And then the second episode was much better, I think, as an episode, well, because of what Pete's saying. You got this emotional core of Magneto, who is struggling with, I tried to destroy the world multiple times or take over the world, but I owe my friend Charles Xavier to do the right thing.
It's the last wish.
You've got the very palpable image of the X-Men essentially stopping January 6th, which feels very present at the same time. So
yeah,
that, I think, gave it an extra layer beyond the important but generic, like, we hate mutants, mutant bad thing that happens in the first episode that feels more consistent throughout the history. The second episode, I was like, oh, no, this was made in the past couple of years.
Well, but I also think, you know, the first episode has to be a pilot. But I also think it does a good job of sort of using the first episode of the original series as fodder to build out this new story. Like, we get them wrecking Sentinels, which that was the villain in the first episode of the animated series.
Some real glorious Sentinel reckoning here. I mean, the glowing claws, throwing Wolverine move, decapitating that. I mean, that was just...
How does that work? Why doesn't Wolverine's skeleton blow up?
Well,
it's a good point.
Great question.
It should.
How do Gambit's powers work in general in this show? Because he did try to kill Cyclops if they explode. Because
also the Jean Grey powers get a little weird with the, like, ear. That got, like, the whole point where he was Cyclops is like, Jean Grey, quickly see if he's lying, and she's like, well, I don't know if that. You know, he could be telling the truth right now and 2 seconds later be lying. And I was like, oh, yeah. And then the Rogue being like, all right, Rogue, touch him and be a doctor. Touch her and be a doctor. I was like, well, I don't remember that.
I like that move. Well, just real quick on the Gambit claws. That was quite a variation on the Fastball special, I found.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where Gambit charges the claws and then explodes him. Like, kinetic force pushes him into Morph, who blob transforms to throw Wolverine into the Master Mold. I was like, damn, that's complicated.
Yeah.
But it
some
made
extra
me,
steps on the fastball,
like,
special.
It was, I thought it was emblematic of the show. It was like, yeah, we do the thing you expect, but we do 9 other things also at the same time.
While we're talking about powers, how do Morph's powers work? I had a whole discussion on the way to school with my son about this because he was like, so does he get their powers or does he just turn into them? And I thought he's just a shape changer, right?
Or yes, I think so, he's just a shape changer.
Got Blob's powers, then was able to kind of do that.
I mean, I guess that's fine, but when
using
he's a
Psylocke's
character,
powers.
Well, that's what I was going to bring up. He morphs into Psylocke holding a sword. So is he holding his skin and bones that he turned into a sword?
I believe he's holding his hardened skin and bones that becomes his sword. So okay, it's a confusing choice for him to continually change into his friends and then do that, use their swords for his body. But also he becomes Death Lady Deathstrike for some reason.
That was,
I thought that was wild as a first move. It was like touche. And then Colossus and then Psylocke. That was badass. in the second episode. And Morph in general, I was like, wow, this character goes hard. He pranks Wolverine very hard. But at the end of the episode, Wolverine likes it. They're having
also pranks sex. At the end of the second, and being like, oh, you sat up in a tree, I'll turn it into your buddy Sabretooth. And then Wolverine smiles. I was like, what is happening right now? But then he claws open beers, and that was
so he can, like, they can fight, they can spar or whatever. I think
they're wrestling like pups,
they're just doing some old wrestling, just two guys doing wrestling. It's no big deal. The show leans very hard into the thing that I think everybody tries and often misses. They always talk about superhero teams as like, but it's really a family, but mostly it's not. It's more like they called the Avengers a family in the MCU movies, but they weren't. They were much more correct when Thor was like, that's a friend from work, because they're coworkers. They just work together and get together sometimes. Here, this is a family. These are people who yell at each other. They just happen to have powers, so they try to blow each other up, and they do really messed up pranks where they can actually really hurt each other. But they all do, at the core, really like each other or get annoyed at each other. Like Wolverine and Cyclops, even though they're competing for the same girl, they have a very brother-brother energy going on there.
Yeah.
Where Wolverine is the little brother who's like, I don't like you. Shut up. And
baby bro.
But it totally works. Like, it comes through, and I think that is really, again, what the X-Men is and what they're about that comes through so nicely in the show. Talking again about the second episode, though, because so many things go down. Like, a lot goes down in the first episode, but the second episode is absolutely wild in terms of the plot twists.
Yeah.
Where we have the trial of Magneto. At the same time, Jean Grey gives birth to Nathan Christopher Charles Summers, who, spoilers if you don't know, though I assume most people checking out this podcast do know, is going to turn out to be Cable at some point later on through a...
Or maybe confused with Strife. Sometimes.
Yeah, or possibly Strife, or maybe X-Man, or Nate Gray, or any number of characters. Whatever X-Man. It is, it's going to get complicated. It
doesn't sound confusing at all.
Complicated. We have a double Jean Grey who shows up at the door.
I think we know what that is.
I don't know if I said out loud, Storm loses her powers.
Yeah, Storm leaves, writes a very touchy letter.
Yeah. So many things happen in this episode.
Magneto goes from, like, saving the day to almost killing everybody, like...
Well, and we didn't even touch on the fact that Magneto and Rogue revisit the fact that they had a romance.
I loved that moment when, like, we get that when they had the first conversation about it, I was like, oh, what a great subplot for this season.
Well,
and then it's like season.
It wasn't episode, a great.
They go to, like, hook up and Gambit's like crying and dropping cards. You can't drop a card.
That goes back to, I don't think it started before, but that goes back to the era where Rogue was trapped in the Savage Land, right? With Magneto. And they started up a relationship.
Was that the... I just remember that Rogue, her powers didn't work on him. So she was like, yeah, I'll hook up with you.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the first interaction. Like, they're talking and Magneto just starts taking off his glove like he's going to go touch her. I was like, whoa, guy, back up the truck. Slow down a little bit. And then, you know, the second interaction, Rogue's like, okay. And I was like, oh, all right. Well, I guess it makes it a little bit better. But I was like, yo, Magneto, what are you even trying to do right now, bro?
Well, he wasn't taking off his pants. Just take off his glove.
Yeah, but I mean, when your power of touch can wreck people, it's a strong,
she had her
bold
glove.
As Pete says on his blog, no glove, no love. Right, Pete?
Yeah. Consent is my point.
Yeah, in your Friends of Humanity blog is what we established, right?
Uh-huh. Cool jackets.
If we're still talking about the second episode, just a couple points. A lot of Genosha talk, which as a comic reader, very stressful.
Yeah.
Great that they're making it, but oh boy.
Yeah.
Big problems coming down the road. Feels like we're going there. How do you guys feel about Magneto's Big M costume?
Yeah, right. All of a sudden he changed. He's like, I'm a good guy now. I'm going to wear black and a giant M. I was like, what the? I was like,
well,
what's his name's from, like, The Incredibles there?
So if I remember correctly, I probably should have looked this up, but that was exactly the costume that he wore in, like, X-Men 200, I want to say, where they had the trial of Magneto, which was at The Hague, right? Not not at the United Nations, where I don't think they hold those type of trials. I could be wrong. I don't know.
What was the last time
trials?
You
mean for a mutant terrorist?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm
where
just saying
the
international
location.
Tribunals aren't normally at the United Nations. That feels like antithetical.
For a guy who is like, wants to be taken very seriously and very philosophical, that he's like, I have M on my shirt is very strange.
Giant M.
It's a good
everyone
costume.
Else's everyone else's costumes are pretty chill, and he's like, M, Magneto, M, I'm M. It's like very funny.
It's like Sesame Street's down the road, bro.
Yeah. I did think the Executioner, great villain. Just badass fight sequence. I love the way Magneto ends up taking down. I love that whole thing was great. Pete, you said you didn't like the comedy in the show, but Wolverine, when he sees that Jean is going into labor, the look on his face, and he's like, "Who's here?
His
I'll kill him."
And
then
he goes,
she flies the keys.
He's
in
like,
his
"Apocalypse
hand.
Is here."
Yeah,
she's like, "No, the baby."
Such, I thought that was so funny and well done. Such a great small moment. And then his line in the hospital. I'll show you a C-section. Come on. Let's go.
That was great. And overall, I'm curious.
I would like to point out,
though,
that Wolverine was there when she needed somebody to be.
That is, I feel like very
purposeful. I don't think that was,
Was, you think that was an accident?
Yeah, you know, because he was like, where's your husband? I don't know. He's been lying to you a lot lately, it seems like. Good thing I'm here to help you out.
But I also, what I was going to say was, I like this more vulnerable Wolverine that we don't really get into the comics anymore. In the comics, like, he still loves Jean, but he's very much constantly like, I'm going to come in, cut everybody to ribbons, and then go do my own thing in my own solo title, leave me alone. And there are people I care about, like the current run of X-Force. There's a lot of stuff going down around him.
Here's about Jubilee.
Yeah, and he cares about everybody, but like, seeing him get soft around Jean and that yearning that's coming through with the animation, it's great.
It's great.
Gets you. Because
it's great for you, but some of us are very scarred by it. So it's a little much to kind of reopen this wound.
Real quick, whose team are you on, Peter? Are you pro Wolverine or Cyclops?
Yeah, and just remember, Cyclops and Jean Grey are married, and marriage is a sacred institution, as you say.
Oh, tell me more, please.
Yeah, your latest blog, by the way, very applicable to what we're talking about.
I really also like the way that this show is even storyboarded like a 90s movie. Like, it has retro.
Has a real Gremlins 2 reveal.
Nah, not the exact reference.
It's like, oh, that's
make.
Going in. Oh, I was thinking about the pitch meeting that Key and Peele did. They're like, Storm leaving, going in. This is, that's in there. What else you want? It's going in.
Well, I'd say two things about that. One, in terms of the animation style, I do think they've updated it a little bit. The lines are a little thicker. It's not quite like Archer level or anything, but it certainly straddles the line between, frankly, mostly terrible 90s animation and what we have in the modern day. It's bad. Yeah. I mean,
Batman the Animated Series made a stylized choice, leaned into it.
I'm not saying everything was bad. All I'm saying is that, like, there was a lot of stuff that was very rushed. This is definitely updating that while still keeping a little bit of that movement and that feeling. But at the same time, we keep talking about the pace here. When I saw there were half-hour episodes, I was like, oh, my God, come on. These things were 22 minutes back in the day. You do not need 30 minutes to do this. It is packed. None of them feel like 30 minutes. They do not feel like it just keeps going and going and going and going.
Yes, it does.
And I love that. And I understand what you're saying, Pete, where you're like, oh my God, this is so much. But I think that's what you need for that length. I would rather have chock full of stuff, 30 minute episodes, than 22 minute episodes where they're like, one thing happens. Because
I think there's a happy medium than having 18 things jammed in versus maybe 8. You know what I mean? Like, we don't have to just do one, but I'm just saying it would be nice to slow it down. My viewing experience is a little different. I watched the first episode and I was like, holy shit, I need to take a break. I can't watch the second one right away. I need to walk away. All this Jean Grey Wolverine shit coming up. I was like, I need to fucking chill.
You got to take your old person pills too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, take some Flintstone vitamins.
Those are young person pills.
Correct. crack a 40 ounce and then sit back down and watch the rest of it. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's so why you're so old. You're mixed in vitamins and 40.
that's how you're supposed to do.
He's
it,
talking
right?
about a 40 ounce of Metamucil.
Yeah. Well, even that'll fuck you up.
Also bad. Different.
That's
bad.
A lot of Metamucil.
That's a lot. And let's just going back to all the way to the beginning. I think the new opening credits, I think, set this mark you're talking about, Alex. They're
it's really great,
updates. Right. Same thing. Storm gets a major upgrade, I thought, throughout in these first two episodes. You get White Queen is added to the opening credit villain run, replacing Warpath or Thunderbird. And I love that the closing credits are still the shitty computer like action figure.
Yeah.
But I would argue, even beyond that, even beyond nostalgia, the opening credits work very nicely to get you caught up. They work as a recap page for anybody who has no idea what's going on here. It shows you the characters. It shows you their powers. Yeah, the theme song is incredible. But like, it gives you the basic information of what you want to, what you need to know. And this is another thing to like wrap back to what I was saying earlier, feeling like picking up a random issue of X-Men and just jumping in. This is something that used to happen all the time in comics, but also all the time in TV, where you'd miss things sometimes and you just kind of have to roll with it. But the writers knew that. So they would work in little cues, sometimes very blatant, sometimes less so, so that you could just jump in and watch the episode. And I think that's something that they're putting into these episodes as well, which is really very well appreciated, because they're not, you know, this has the same pace, right? Like you were saying, Justin, as the previous series, I know they had the cliffhangers of the previous series. So like they were doing serialized soap opera streaming television before that, years before that was a thing. But at the same time, they needed to make sure if you were not watching X-Men the Animated Series on any given Saturday morning, you could jump into the next episode and still be like, okay, I missed 30 things, but here's what's going on with Rogue. And I think that's exactly what they're doing here, and that's should be lauded. I'm glad they're doing it. More shows honestly should do that.
Well, and they're also adding a little bit of variation, at least in from the first to the second episode in the opening credits. There's these extra little cut scenes that are sort of fleshing out the world in an interesting way, and giving us little windows.
I will say, as somebody who saw the third episodes as well, they keep doing that. Like, they keep changing that and they keep tweaking that.
That's
and
awesome.
I think that's super smart because, again, they're giving you these quick little visual cues to be like, this is who this character is. Here's some stuff that you maybe missed or is coming up. We'll see what happens, you know? So it's great. What else? Any other moments, things from the episodes you guys wanted to call out? Justin?
I have just a couple things. The Friends of Humanity, still terrifying. Great villains. I love that they had a sentinel hand underneath the sheet.
Oh, my
awesome.
God.
Great reveal. Loved the basketball scene. Like, so Jim Lee, 90s. The fact that we see it for a second, everyone's just being so nasty to each other for no reason. And then it comes back at the end where Jean Grey's a ref. I was like, what? It's so goofy, and it's so taken so seriously, and it just works. And
the fact that she's pregnant and then changed into a ref outfit, I was like, that's, you know, that's a lot.
Using Morph as he's Archangel in the first episode, like, and all those refs we already mentioned, like, I love that as just an Easter egg machine.
Yeah.
And shouts to the Gold Balls reference we get.
Yeah, in, right.
And also at the top of the episode, like, the little newspaper blows across screen with, like, Benetton's mutant fashion. We get, I think, Banshee, Dust. And I couldn't see, there were like three other mutants. I couldn't quite tell who they
were. Well, there was also on the newspaper, they mentioned the Hellfire Gala, which is a pretty new thing in the comic books. And they also mentioned Spider-Man on there as well, right?
Yeah. It was a wild little thing to just happen. It might have been,
Maggot
there's on
all
there.
All these
too.
Things, like, I mean, we got the Warlocks real quick. Like, it was, you know, things happen quick in this thing. Mm-hmm. They're already putting them on an island. I was like, all right, let's not second episode in start talking about.
Oh, you said
island
Morlocks, not Warlocks, right?
Yeah, sorry, Morlocks.
No, that's fine. I thought you were talking about Warlock like Doug Ramsey.
Me too.
Warlock,
I was like,
but
did
we're
I miss?
We're building up to that. Okay, we're gonna get there.
All right. Yeah, you're like, Cypher countdown clock.
Let's talk about the ending a little bit. I don't know how much we want to tease or potentially spoil or anything for people who don't know the comic books, but there's obviously some big stuff that are going with this clone Jean who shows up, or double Jean who shows up. What do you guys think about this?
I think they're doing it. I think they're doing the story. And like, I don't think they're ones to be like, let's not do this, let's change it. They're like, no, we're just going to translate this story to a dope-ass 90s version of the X-Men.
Yep. Well, if you don't know what we're hinting at, definitely check out next week and we'll be talking about it. Any other things before we leave off here? I wanted to bring one other thing up. We haven't done this in a while, but we usually go to our vision board at the end here where we talk about the future. Rather than talking about what's in the episode, I wanted to ask you guys just sort of a heat check on Marvel Studios a little bit, because everybody loves this, and like critics love this, and viewers love it, and everybody's loving it and having a great time with it. I know we were a little mixed on Echo, but at the same time, that came out this year, and people were mostly like, yeah, it's fine. That's fine.
I loved Echo.
Shrug.
Yeah, but are we back? Are we back with Marvel this year, or are we not quite there yet?
I take it easy, but it would be nice to get trending upwards.
I think, you know, just because we're back, we're still back here, doesn't mean we're back everywhere. Because I think the difference between Echo and almost everything else they've made lately is this is just a series of strong creative choices without apology. There's no like, well, we went back and redid it because we were worried about this and that. It's like, no, they committed to doing this, and then they committed hard to the idea behind it, and they backed all of their individual creative choices with those two initial philosophical and creative decisions. And so that's where they get something that people can get behind, because they made a ton of great choices.
Yeah, I think I worry that they will take the wrong lessons from this, which is we did this before. Let's just do it again with everything, which is not what's working here. It's more, I think, taking a look back at, okay, X-Men, the animated series, everything that we've been talking about on this podcast. Here's the reason it worked about the X-Men. Let's do that again, but figure out little ways we could tweak and update it and push it forward and continue the story without it just being like this reverential, everything we did was perfect before. You know, they're not updating it for updating sake, but they're also not, you know, keeping it steady for keeping it steady sake at the same time. So I worry that they're going to go in that direction with stuff and be like, oh, that worked. Maybe this is what they're doing with Daredevil right now. We've been talking about this a little bit. We're like, people like the Netflix show. Let's just do that again. And maybe they're right. Pete's given a big nod here.
I'd love that.
Yes.
I love that show. More of that, please.
But we'll see. We'll see if it does it in the same way where it straddles that line. I'm just not sure. But we'll see what happens. Yeah. Going to be an interesting year, folks. Going to be an interesting year.
Buckle up. Deadpool, come out.
Deadpool, come on. And next episode of X-Men 97, come on. We'll continue to cover it here on the podcast. If you'd like to support the show and all the shows we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about X-Men 97 or anything Marvel. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. At Comic Book Live on Twitter/X. Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram. Comic Book Club Live. For this podcast and many more. Until next time, stay marvelous.
I'll show you a C-section.
Oh, boy.